As you can see, I'm from University of Western Sydney, and the University of Western Sydney has a fairly new medical school. The first cohort of students are now in their third year. And what we'll be looking is the use of LAMS in years 3 to 5 of the School of Medicine at UWS. So I just want to outline how the students actually work in year 3. And I'm trying to balance not repeating myself, because I have introduced this sort of talk before at a LAMS conference, but I don't want to leave anybody behind. So has anybody been to one of my talks before about UWS? Okay, great. So I won't be repeating myself too much. In year 3, the students are mostly on clinical attachments, and that means that they're in the hospitals doing learning through watching doctors do their work, and also then going back to their textbooks and reading more about the diseases that they encounter while they're in the hospitals. That means that they can be doing any one of 3 different attachments during the year. So 30% of the students will be doing surgery, 30% will be doing medicine, and 30% will be doing medicine in community. Medicine in community means GPs, sexual health clinics, that sort of community-based medicine. At the same time, though, this university wanted to make sure that they still remember their basic sciences while they're in the clinical setting. So the first 2 years of the course is heavily based on learning basic sciences, and often what can happen is the students completely forget that they learned physiology, biochemistry, etc., and then they come to year 3 and they get really lost in the clinical world and they forget to investigate further the scientific basis for diseases. So what the university has done is created about 75 hours worth of scientific content that will be online, and the students do that while they're on attachments, and we use LAMS to do that. So, for example, while they're in surgery, they'll be doing the oncology LAMS online, doing 4 different cases. While they're in medicine, they'll be doing immunity and infection, and while they're in medicine in community, they're doing cardiovascular disease and risk cases. And the hope is that it'll both complement what they're doing in the clinical area, but it will also be separate and not dependent on what they're doing in the clinical area. So, for example, in surgery, the students might be witnessing breast cancer removal, and then they'll be doing a breast cancer case online, but it doesn't necessarily have to go that way. They might not encounter breast cancer in their surgery rotation. In year 4, just to emphasise that the same sort of things happen while they're doing mental health, they'll be studying neurosciences. While they're doing paediatrics, they'll be doing nutrition and metabolism. That one's a little bit less linked or complementary. And then while they're doing obstetrics and gynaecology, they'll be doing genes, growth and development, so learning about diseases that happen a lot in the fetal stage. And year 5, again, is similar, and I won't go into that anymore. So when we were trying to work out how to put all this content in, so we've got 3 years of content, 10 modules to put online, so 250 hours in total of online learning that we have to create. And because it's a new course, there's actually no curriculum, there's no content already for us to use. We have to create it all from scratch. And that's proved to be quite a big task, as you can imagine. When we decided to use LAMS, the immediate idea was, well, why don't we create an empty LAMS sequence that they can then populate with content, and that'll be a really quick way for everybody to get some content online. And the idea was that, well, first of all, that template will be reusable. The LAMS sequence that's empty will be reusable. It can act as inspiration, so the people who are putting the content in don't have any idea of the sorts of tools that LAMS has. They don't have any experience with online learning, so they might get some ideas about what sort of things they can use. It would show them some good pedagogical practices, so, you know, forum design and balance of collaborative to asynchronous learning and so on. And also it links in with an idea that James probably will talk about later today, which is creating a pedagogical planner in LAMS. So, you know, it helps with the planning of how, what content you need to go and find, what you need to do to get this content out. So this was my first attempt at a LAMS template, and in 2007, and I gave this to all of the content experts. I put it into a Word format as well in case they weren't comfortable with using it online. I trained them all in how to do authoring in LAMS and pretty much gave it to them and said, I'll give you support. The other reason I was very keen on using a template in LAMS was 2007, I was pregnant and I was going on maternity leave and I needed them to keep on working while I was gone. Just to quickly go back to the idea of templates. So that's a very specific template and it's very restrictive in some ways as to what the content expert can do, especially if they don't understand the way LAMS works and you can delete stuff and put it back in and move it all around as you wish. If they thought that they had to do it my way, then they found that quite restrictive. The other sort of template you can use is one about pedagogical intention. So in the UK Open University, they have what's called a compendium tool, which really gives sort of pedagogical intentions, so a list of pedagogical intentions. As you can see in the example of a PBL design, you might start with a problem. Problem-based learning design, you might start with a problem, you ask lots of questions about that problem, you go away and you research those questions, you come back and you talk about it, and then you hopefully have a solution to that problem. That's not very specific about what tools you have to do and what sorts of activities you have to do, just the sort of things you need to get out of that lesson. So it's a much higher level of template or design. So going back to my template and looking at that, that's what I gave the gave the content experts. This is what we got in example. So in immunity infection, that's what we got. Nothing at all like my template. Very didactic, lots of notice boards, lots of bits of information, not very much question and answer or even multiple choice. And this is an oncology example. Again, nothing like my template. A mixture of collaborative and didactic learning. And this cardiovascular disease and risk example, you can see there's four forums in it. They needed to do originally those four forums in 1 week. It was huge, huge load. And there's also submitting a booklet, information booklet in group work and some other bits and pieces, highly collaborative learning. So again, very different from my original, what I thought was good pedagogical learning and balanced and so on. And you can also see a lot of them have a lot more activities. So I think mine had 12 or 13 activities where all the other ones had on average, well, between 15 to 25 activities. So I really underestimated the number of activities that they wanted to use. And they often are quite short little snappy activities that kind of take the students through things. But so the template idea didn't work. And the other feedback I got from them is that they just didn't want a template. The content experts had ideas about how they wanted to teach. They had their own philosophies of teaching and they wanted to do it from scratch. And so we needed to have a different approach to how we were going to get the content in some sort of order. As you can see, those three different examples, they're all very different and they all had problems in their own right. Some was too collaborative, it was too much for the students. Others, there wasn't enough Q&A, the students weren't getting, you know, so we just needed to find a balance. So what we decided to do was create what we called an e-storyboard because in the next generation of content that we're developing, we had content experts who probably weren't as excited about generating the content or learning unless they really wanted some guidance. We needed to have a review of the completed modules and put them into some sort of paper documentation so that the Australian Medical Association could accredit our course and know what we were doing and why we were doing things. And it had this e-storyboard, which is created in Word, had the advantage that if the content experts were using it to flick back ideas, they didn't have to be trained in how to use LAMS. And this was particularly significant in this current round of content development because we had teams of four or five content experts, none of them who knew how to use LAMS, none of them really had time to use LAMS because they were all clinicians working in hospitals and they were doing this in their own free time. So we created this and it went through many different iterations of what we wanted to do, and I think I started very, I want to direct their learning, and again kept on coming against this block of, well, if I direct their learning too much, we're not going to get any innovations, and it's also going to frustrate the content experts, even in a Word document. So first of all, we decide what are the three things that we need to get out of this set of learning. We need there to be a clinical case, because generally we teach medicine based on a problem or a clinical case. The whole point of this is that it's science, so we need to make sure that they talk about science, because the clinicians all too easily want to talk about their own clinical experiences, and that's easy for them. It's harder for them to remember the depth of science that they need to go into to explain to the students, and that sometimes they have to go away and research it themselves. So, you know, they tend to not jump to do that. And we also wanted to make sure that there was some evidence-based medicine or some talking about the ethics behind the sorts of problems that they were looking at. And that really reflects the talk we had this morning about inquiry-based learning, because medicine is a topic that students can't learn everything for, and that's just the nature of medicine today. There's too much out there. There's too much science coming in with new ideas, so they need to know how to answer a question that a patient gives them and go away and research it and find an effective answer and quickly. So it's important that they remember that. So just very quickly, an example of a loose structure with a case. So the clinical case is a baby comes in with seizures, low calcium and vitamin D levels in their blood. The science is looking at vitamin B and calcium and bone metabolism, looking at vitamin D epidemiology in Australia, looking at vitamin D in other body systems. And then the evidence-based medicine or ethics is debating, because vitamin D is made in sunlight under your skin, but we're also told to stay out of the sunlight because of skin cancer. What's the balance that you need to achieve that people don't go to extremes in either way and get in danger in either way? In particular, there are at-risk populations like veiled Muslim women. So we quite like this big design process because it was easy to check the balance of science to clinical, as I was saying. It was easy to place resources in the right place and to see if there were any gaps left. And we liked the fact that it included evidence-based medicine. Then we applied a second level of structure to what we were doing. And this was the teaching and learning point, a concept check and feedback. And so basically to every learning or teaching point that we wanted the students to understand, we wanted to make sure that we checked that they actually understood it. So we presented them with information or research or something, and then we had to make sure that we actually had engaged the learners and they had understood that concept. And then we needed to give them feedback about how they had answered that. And when we applied this second level structure to what we already had, we could see immediately where there were gaps in their learning. Just to give you an example, so in the medical ethics and evidence-based medicine part of that, the students were introduced to skin cancer campaign. That was the teaching and learning point to talk about skin cancer and sun exposure. And then the concept checks was to understand that they understood the problem and debate both sides, and then they could create and synthesize some information from that debate, like a video presentation to at-risk populations or a pamphlet. And I'm talking a bit slowly, so I'll keep going. And we found that really powerful second-level structure really powerful in a retrospective setting. So when we were looking at the cases that had already been designed, it really picked up the gap. So there wasn't feedback to a concept check. There wasn't a concept check at all. There wasn't an introduction to what they were doing. There was no flow between what the activities. The students didn't understand why are we doing this and all that sort of stuff. So it really helped to, when we mapped out the activities in that way, it really helped to show where there was a problem. And it also helped us to double check that the learning objectives that were stated at the beginning were covered in all the concept checks, etc. So that's just an example of what the e-storyboard looks like. So the front page has got all that information, a little overview so that I know what the case is about, because I've now got 30 cases in my head and I can't remember what does what. And then what the learning objectives were, and of course that goes down the page. And then just to, again, extract that diet, lifestyle, behaviour at risks for vitamin D intake learning point. This is a work in progress, so I just wanted to give you a document that we were actually working on. You can see how it was helping us to map out the areas that we needed to work on, what we had, what the activities we could do, and so on. And that's the feedback that was needed. So where do I go to? Where do we go from here? Well, we really like what we've done. It's been really helpful. We found that other people have been finding it helpful. So those people who need to show what we're doing to other organisations, AMA is one example, or show to even those people who are developing content and they need to prove that they've been teaching, it's a really useful document to show to whatever person that they've been teaching. We've discovered that in our sort of learning, you can't have a really strong template design. It has to be a much looser thing to provide for the differences in teaching that you need for the different topics, and that if you did make it too rigid, it just didn't work and it wasn't going to be adopted. But I can see where LAMS as empty sequences would work for other settings, but in our setting it wasn't appropriate and we had to go to a much looser setting. So any questions? The finished storyboards. I don't have them here, but I can, if you're interested, provide you with examples.
Did you reskin the existing LAMS look and feel to create one specifically for your user group?
No, we didn't. I think my paper, which is in the CD, has a storyboard attached to it, so that vitamin D case, and it's not again, it was a work in progress case at the time it was published, but it shows you the whole flow of the whole case from start to finish, and that's a 5-hour case.
Do you have the actual LAMS version available online? No, I don't, sorry.
it's a bit hard because it's university intellectual property and I have to get permission from the content experts, but yeah. We do want to share a lot, and part of the ALCT project is to be able to share what we've learned and the learning designs that we've learned, and that's a very important part of the project. And we're going to have to balance sharing the content or just sharing the design, and we have to still work through some of those ideas. Yeah. Any other questions?